Welcome to the Community Podcast from your friends at the Community Paper. I'm Nick Trigudiou, the managing editor, and it's my pleasure to be here with a local journalist, man about town, host and executive producer of Newsnight on WUCF, and one of my favorite local journalists. Please don't tell the other local journalists, Steve Mort. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? I think I've watched one of your podcasts where you say something similar to another journalist.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's weird. I've never heard that before. And
anyway, the tables are turned this time. Usually it's me grilling you on my show. So I appreciate you having me.
I love coming on WUCF. I love coming on Newsnight. That airs at 8:30 every week on Fridays if people want to
Yep.
tune in. You can also catch it afterwards. You put out pieces and parts online, on social media, on the YouTube channel, or you can watch the entire
Yep.
thing afterwards.
Yeah, you can go to wucf.org/newsnight, where you'll find like a whole ton of content on there. Our show is only, 26 minutes long. I'm doing interviews all week. I'm talking to folks all week. So the main venue for a lot of that content is on our website now, on YouTube and social media and stuff, because that's where we all are these days, right?
Exactly. And I want to say, like, a lot of work, even though it's 26 minutes, that doesn't sound like very long. So much work goes into that, from getting the rant, getting the journalists together to come in and talk about the topics, to making sure they're well briefed on that, to going out and shooting B-roll and video and interviews. So really appreciate everything you do.
There's a long history of public broadcasting, and in Orlando, and WUCF, the University of Central Florida, now has the license for WUCF Television. It's had WUCF FM for much longer than that, 45 years of that station, and it's still going strong and still playing jazz on 89.9. So for anybody who hasn't checked out that at that end of the dial, head on over to 89.9, and Nick will tell you it's a fine station.
I love the station. I was actually news director, so that's how I got bit by the news bug, basically. Was volunteering there in the newsroom. We had a newsroom when the radio station was in the basement of the library and the antenna was
Yes.
on top of the library. So I became news director there and just have always had a special place in my heart for WUCF on both sides, both television and radio. And I would
So you were doing news then, Yes. then, and you didn't learn your lesson. And you are still doing it now. There's something to be said for that, because it's a business that is often not easy. You probably have one of the best gigs in town for a journalist, but it's often a frustrating labor of love, I think, for a lot of journalists. And it's great to see people who stick around in the game, and especially in our community, and cover the issues that are important to the people here.
Well, and I just want to do a shout out too for WUCF Passport, something that I think that everybody should consider at the very least, is supporting local public media, whether that's WUCF, Central Florida Public Media, or both, if you can. But WUCF Passport seems like a really great option for somebody. For only $60 a year, you can basically stream a bunch of content, not only from WUCF, but from PBS as well.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways that you can contribute to WUCF. Of course, as many of you will know from the news, we lost federal and state funding. And what that means is that viewer and listener support is more important than ever. And you can donate to WUCF in many ways. And one of the ways is to head over to wucf.org. And there's they make it really easy for you to give there. And one of the things you get, as you mentioned, is access to Passport, which is sort of the library of not only national PBS programming, but also the local programming you see here. So, for example, on a Friday night at 8:30, you might not be at home. You might be out sampling the local nightlife in Central Florida, and you want to go back and check out what we talked about on Newsnight at another time. And you can actually do that on the PBS app whenever you want. Again, you know, we're in an environment in the media where people expect their content on demand, as they should. The days of, you know, appointment television are kind of over. And, you know, when people want to watch Newsnight at a different time, now they can. And that's one of the benefits of the PBS app. And with Passport, you can also see all those shows that you love from PBS as well. And oftentimes you get to see them first. I mean, some people might say, well, I can just stream that on BritBox or on you know, on Amazon or whatever it is. Well, oftentimes you get a lot of those shows first when you go to to the Passport app. So well worth getting. I'm glad you raised that.
Yep, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the content, some of the stories that you've recently covered. And just so people understand, if they haven't seen Newsnight before, what the format is to, and we'll have some links in the show notes and everything, but the format is that Steve and team, because it's not just Steve over there, he's an incredible, talented team of people on the staff at Newsnight, goes out and usually does some coverage, does some interviews. And then has, for the most part, with the exception of when I come on, really incredible local journalists, whether it's from television stations, other local publications, come on to give some context around the story as well. So it's not just what, you know, Newsnight is covering, it's what the Orlando Sentinel has covered and brought to the table, and WKMG and other stations as well. So one of the first stories you wanted to talk about was about the Orange County education system, Orange County Public Schools, having a lower enrollment than expected.
Yeah, that's right. You know, on the way that the Newsnight works, I will say we do have an amazing team. We have a small but mighty team. My colleague Crystal Knowles is a senior producer on the program. She's worked around other television and newspaper outlets in Florida, mainly in Central Florida, and she's always working to gather those interviews, put together stories that sort of help add some context then to to the discussion. And you know, because we don't have in the traditional sense, you know, of the word, a newsroom. We have a couple of us that work on the show. You know, we do lean on the expertise of reporters that are covering these stories, kind of like, you know, day in and day out. And you know, there are a plethora of great journalists in Central Florida that are really getting into the weeds, that are holding those in power, that are holding their feet to the fire, keeping them accountable, and following the stories that really have a long-term significant impact on our growing region. And we use their the reporting that they've gathered, maybe additional information that they weren't able to get into their pieces. We're all time constrained, as we talked about earlier, and helping you know, helping them bring more of that information to audiences to keep them informed. So, you know, it's a show that I believe in. I think it's really important for discord, and also for you know, this kind of sounds cheesy, but sort of the pursuit of truth and accuracy. In fact, I'm actually drinking out of my PolitiFact mug here, because facts, I think, are one of these things that often these days can be in short supply on either side of the political spectrum, let's just face it. And I think that the more that we can do as journalists to help people be informed, the better the world is. So anyway, that's a very long way of getting into the story that you asked me about. You know, Orange County Public Schools is not alone in this issue. There's been significant enrollment drops in the public school system in Florida, pretty much since the pandemic, obviously. The pandemic kind of, I think, really sort of precipitated what happened here. Orange County Public Schools in particular, we talk about them a lot because they are the biggest school district in our region. It's one of the biggest school districts in in the nation, in fact. Several Florida school districts are Miami-Dade, Broward, Hillsborough, those kinds of places have also seen enrollment declines. Before the school year started, and I talked with the Orange County School Superintendent, we did an in-depth interview. You can catch that online, wcf.org/newsnight, with Maria Vasquez, the school superintendent, OCPS. At that time, they were looking at an enrollment decline predicted of about 3,000 students. What actually ended up happening was they had an enrollment decline of about 6,500, more than that, between 6,500 and 7,000 students. So more than double what they expected to see in terms of enrollment decline. That's really significant. And we saw that the superintendent at a recent school board meeting sort of talk about why that might be. There was a significant drop in the number of immigrant students. I think, off the top of my head, about 2,500 in the public school system in the last year. But also, one of the main issues seems to be, if you ask school administrators, is the state push for school choice and vouchers. The superintendent of Orange County Public Schools will say that she is a strong supporter of school choice. I mean, this is not a new thing in Florida. I mean, school choice has been a thing that has been pushed by leaders in Florida for a long time. But there has been a real aggressive push of late to give parents the choice of where they send their kids to school by sort of allocating money to voucher programs that allow them to pick other forms, private schools, for example. And what public school leaders will say is, we have no problem with that. But what we do have a problem with is not funding public schools adequately. So what they're looking at now is a variety of different ways of trying to get people to enroll their kids in private schools. They're actually looking at this as a sort of a marketing challenge, which has been something that the public school sector has not really had to worry about as much in prior years. So we've been watching that a lot. What does that decline in enrollment mean practically for the kids that are there? Well, what it means is it means less money for those schools. So in this instance with Orange County Public Schools, it's resulted, I think, in an estimated $50 million shortfall in funding. Funding is allocated per student. So that has real life consequences. The budget that was passed by Orange County Public Schools is slightly larger than the prior budget for various reasons. But what it's meant is that, they've had to reshuffle money around. They've had to reallocate staff to different places. And that means that you can get a kind of a disjointed experience for students. So currently they're trying to figure out how to do that, to make those kinds of changes with the budget challenges that they've got with minimum disruption to learning. So I think that's one of the most important stories facing our community, anyone who's got kids that are school age. And so we've spent a decent amount of time in recent weeks talking about that and trying to explain to parents, what exactly it means when fewer people enroll in public schools and why.
And one thing I heard on from some of the journalists that you had on Newsnight talking about this is it's not hitting every school the same. So it's not a, every school dropped by 50 students. Some schools are much more affected, and what's going to happen is, or what has happened now that we're a little bit into the school year, a month or more into the school year, is some schools have had to transfer some of their staff over to other schools. Some schools are going to be affected more and going to receive less money than some other schools who may only have lost or maybe even have still gained students, right? So
Yeah.
that's going to affect them in different ways as well.
Yeah, I mean, much like anything, it's not uniform. We already know that if you live in certain areas, your access to public schools is better than in other areas. And in this instance, the enrollment declines haven't hit equally in different places. So yes, this is sort of part of that reorganization that school districts are having to do. I think about 100 teachers or so within Orange County Public Schools are getting reassigned to new new roles or new schools that kind of better align with staffing with that lower enrollment. And that's something we're seeing across the board. There's also it's also not equal between high schools and middle schools and elementary schools. And from my understanding, elementary schools have seen this particularly acutely. So depending where you live, how old your child is, what their achievement level is, all of that kind of thing, makes a difference to sort of the the change in experience they'll see. And, you know, school districts are trying to do all of this at the same time as making public schools an attractive option, right? And that's the whole point. They say they're not opposed to school choice. In fact, they think school choice is a good thing, and would advocate for it. But it's up to them, they say, to go into competition, if you like, to market what they get. And that's tricky, I think it's fair to say, when you're losing a significant amount of that per student pot of money that they would get from the state. So, you know, it's a challenging time, and it's one that is affecting our region here in Orange County, but also, you know, school districts around the state.
Let's switch over and talk a little bit about Orange County is walking a fine line with the state of Florida on a couple of different points, one being DOGE. But also, I was interested to hear about this story. I didn't realize the Vision 2050 issue that they're having with the state as well. And so, walking a fine line there. So, Orange County came up with its Vision 2050 plan. It's trying to plan ahead from our development standpoint, which talks about, you know, covers everything from education to transportation to a bunch of other topics. And because of some state legislation, it's no longer viable plan. It doesn't line up with the state, what they want to do in terms of development, specifically housing, and developers. And so they are, you know, walking a little bit of a tightrope here. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
This is a story that where I'm planning to work on. I briefly had a back and forth with Orange County about having somebody speak to me about this. They're a little hesitant to do that at the moment, and the reason is that there's a process going on with the state. That's what they tell me. So Vision 2050 is essentially like a planning blueprint for Orange County. Comes with a bunch of zoning changes as well, and the point of it is to kind of guide growth in the next decade, or the next decades, I should say, sort of emphasizing, you know, smart growth, sustainability, directing the development in existing urban areas, brownfield sites, if you like. And that, of course, as we know, is super important in every part of where we live, including the areas that you cover, and sort of the downtown core of Orlando, where development has been meteoric in recent years. The problem is, as you alluded to there, is this law that was passed by the legislature, SB 180. What SB 180 was supposed to do, or aimed to do, according to those that support it, is make it easier for areas that are impacted by natural disasters like hurricanes. We recently had Hurricane Helene, Hurricane Milton, to bounce back quicker. So there aren't burdensome development regulations placed on you know, developers by local governments that make it hard to reconstruct things. I mean, you know, we saw this discussion happened recently in California with the fires in Los Angeles, for example. I mean, were local governments there going to make it easier for communities to rebuild, that kind of thing? And so the aim of this legislation is to make it quicker and easier for developers to develop. And what that's meant is some confusion about what it means exactly. In what circumstances. But also, you know, developers have kind of looked at that and said, hey, you know, there's a lot of communities now that are, you know, growth conscious and, you know, have put us in focus. There's been a vast amount of growth in our region, huge amount of sprawl. And we've seen communities in Orange County and Seminole County, for example, push back on that. In fact, in Orange County, voters voted for a rural boundary at the prior election. You know, it's something that's on people's minds as they sort of sit in traffic and see all of this growth going on. What's happened is, because of that law, SB 180, the state of Florida has said, well, what you have in Vision 2050 does not work, and sort of declared it null and void. It flagged 14 policies that were, quote, more restrictive and burdensome than previous standards. I think the previous standard baseline for practices was August 1st of last year. So things that are more restrictive than that run afoul of Vision 2050. So what's happening now is that the county planning environmental development services are engaging, they say, with the Department of Commerce on the state level to try to determine which policy changes could be amended, right, to bring Vision 2050 into compliance with state law. And that is currently where they're at. This Vision 2050 was a really important piece of legislation, or not legislation, a really important document for the commission. And I think they're keen to see something come out of this going forward, because it's something that the county worked very hard on. And I think most people, regardless of your opinion on development, would say that having a strategic way of developing in a very fast-growing region is incredibly important, whether you're sort of on the developer side or on the conservation side. And having that down in a document, I think, is something that most people want. It's just trying to bring together those two different components, Vision 2050 and SB 180, together in a way that'll actually gel and all sides can agree on, is something that's currently going on. And the county and the state are working together on that, we understand at the moment. And therefore, it's a story we're keeping our eye on. And when something comes out of this, we're going to cover it, because I think that everybody in our region is touched by development in some way. And I know that there are a lot of local journalists that are covering our local governments here in Central Florida, and we're going to be bringing them on to talk about it, because they're following it closely, and it's an issue that I think affects everyone.
Absolutely. And just thinking about it, having a short-term plan might be great, but really when it comes to the development of the region, we talk about like building new roads, where do the fire stations, police stations, schools go? All of that is taken into account. It needs to be planned out a little further.
Yeah, it's all a big puzzle. And that actually is a good segue, if I can take the liberty, into the other topic that I was going to talk about today.
Segues are your job. I mean,
Yeah,
you're a
I don't always do an excellent job at it. I try. But the other thing I wanted to mention was transportation. And this is, I think, one that anybody who watches Newsnight on the regular will know that we spend quite a lot of time on the transportation issue, and there's a reason for that. And all of this is linked together in this whole growth picture. Transit, I think many people would say, is one of, if not the most important issue that faces our city because of the amount of growth. We see local leaders talk about it all the time. The whole debate over the penny sales tax in Orange County to pay for transportation, and we see the public talking about it all the time. Whether they are aware that they're talking about transportation issues or not, they're complaining about the traffic, and they're complaining about how long it takes to get places, and therefore, they are talking about transportation and they're talking about growth. So, I think that it's something that we have a duty to cover. I've read reports in the Orlando Sentinel and on Central Florida Public Media. We have covered it too. We've spoken to people that see this, that where it takes them 3 hours on a bus service to get from their work or to get from home to work, and then they've got to do it again on the other end. Transportation planners that I've talked to concede that a lot more work needs to be done, a lot more improvement needs to be happening in our region. The problem is, and this is why I think you see leaders like Mayor Jerry Demings talk about this need all the time, is that building transit infrastructure is incredibly expensive. Roads and especially public transportation are expensive. And, here in Central Florida, we have a city, much of which, or an urban area, I should say, much of which was built post-war. Obviously, you have sort of, historic districts, many of which you cover, places like Winter Park and Winter Garden, downtown Orlando, historic neighborhoods. Those areas, though, the bits that connect between those areas are pretty new. They're pretty modern. Some people might call it sprawl, but people live there. A lot of people live there. Hundreds of thousands of people live in those areas. And if you live in those areas, it means you're not really in a walkable place to get to where you need to go to the grocery store, to get to schools, wherever you're going, to get to work. And that means that transportation is limited for you. You have your car, and that's pretty much it. There might be a bus, we'll trundle by once every half an hour or so. And people usually say, hey, we want, I'll use public transportation. Public transportation is popular when it's good. The people want to use the bus, they want to use the trains, but it has to be frequent, it has to be dependable, it has to run on their schedule. And that's, very, very expensive. There are projects going on that we've talked about extensively, and we're going to continue to talk about. Local governments are currently spending money on studying the prospects, and I'm sure a lot of your readers will know about the potential Sunshine Corridor. This is where several large organizations, Universal, Brightline, Sunrail, other businesses in the tourism area, sort of coming together with this sort of plan for a rail connection, basically to connect Sunrail with the airport. And with the attractions area, Disney, there'll then be an interchange with Brightline, the services to Miami. It's hoped will then expand on to Tampa via the attractions area as well. That is a multi-billion-dollar, multi-decade proposal. And at the moment, we're very much in the sort of the discussion and studying. But they are, local governments are committing real money to studying this thing. The state is very interested in it. The federal government in prior years has expressed a great deal of interest in this. But what it all requires is local investment in order to attract those matching funds, particularly from the federal government. So local governments and businesses are going to have to put down a lot of money. It's a huge long-term investment in this community. And the way those discussions are going is being covered extensively by journalists that are really getting in, into the weeds on how those discussions are going. And as a consequence, we're talking about it because, whether people think they're interested in transportation or not, they're interested in it. There's also the roads question, and the state has really prioritized expenditures in, on the roads. I mean, Florida just approved recently this year, I think, another $1.5 billion, but more than $1.5 billion, I think, to accelerate work on major I-4 corridor road projects. There's always road projects on I-4, right? At the moment, they're looking at the sort of the area from like 27 to Champions Gate. I'm sure you, Nick, have sat in that traffic endlessly. They want to add express lanes in each direction, ramps there and new ramps there as well. Improvements west of the Osceola Parkway to World Center Drive. Express lanes there, reconstructing the bridges there. The road connection from Orlando to Tampa, as we all know, is, I think it's objective to say, pretty bad.
It's bad.
How many times have you plugged into your GPS driving back from Tampa, plugged in your home address in Orlando, and it's taken you via Ocala to avoid I-4? And something needs to be done. There's been long-term resistance, of course, to to spending money on the rail line on the state, by the state, to spending money on a rail connection. Whether you think it's right or you think it's wrong, the state has chosen to primarily invest in that road connection. And I think that, as that road connection improves, hopefully over the years, that could have a pretty sizable impact in, on our community, in terms of our relationship with Tampa and the ease of traffic. Can't help but create more sort of more commerce, more economic activity between the two places if that connection is better. So that's another thing we're watching is where do all these road improvements actually lead us? Do they lead us to a more seamless transportation picture here, or do they just create more traffic? I mean, there's, you know, I talked on the show recently with Alexa Lorenzo from WFTV Channel 9, covers their transportation issues over there. And we were talking about this issue of induced demand that, you know, a lot of road planners will talk to you about, or urban planners, I say, will talk to you about, where, you know, when you build extra lanes, like they want to get to 10 lanes in some sections of I-4, whether that just actually creates more traffic. I mean, you know, if you build lanes, they'll often just fill up. So is it a long-term strategy? Does that help, or do you need that public transportation picture as well? So again, you know, another issue that's tied to growth, and I think one that we just can't ignore.
And you build the lanes, you can only build so many. And the growth, as we've mentioned, whether it comes to education or development of housing and stuff like that, the growth of Central Florida is just going to continue.
A lot of this is going to come down to sort of raw data. What does the data show? And or what do the data show? This is a thing, and I get this wrong. You know, the AP, I'm not even going to go down there. What the data show about whether or not you know, any of these things are going to be viable. So, you know, our job is not to say, I think rail travel's better than road travel, or I think road travel's. Our job is to report on the discussion, is to look at the data, to look at the facts, look at how things have worked in other places, and tell people about it, and let people draw their conclusions. Because, you know, when you've got an area that's growing this fast, you're going to have a lot of people that disagree. I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely. I think we see that all the time. But we agree
Absolutely.
on a lot of stuff, Steve. So thank you for coming on the show today.
I think so. You bet. It
Yeah.
was fun.
Oh, I did have one question for you. This is a British question because I'm obviously very sophisticated. So I do watch a lot of PBS. I do watch a lot of British-based content. I listen to a lot of British authors because I don't read anymore. I listen to audiobooks. And let me ask you this because I am confused about it. I'm not sure if it's a t-shirt or a sweater or a hoodie. What is a jumper?
A jumper is basically a sweater. We have
Okay.
a lot of words for sweaters. You know, there's a jumper, there's a jersey, there's a Guernsey, there's a cardigan.
Okay.
We
I
have a,
am
well, I
not
don't
as
know if we,
sophisticated as I thought.
they're all, well, so the jersey and the Guernsey, I think, you know, is to do with, I think I, you know, I'm not an expert on, you know, warm clothing, but
Warm
I would say
warmer?
that I think that's to do with like the where the wool comes from. I'm
Okay.
not 100% sure on a cardigan, but you know, as we say in England, when the weather gets starts to get cold, which is almost every day,
Yeah.
is it's a great day for a light sweater, a great day for a cardigan, which is to sort of bastardize the words of that. I can't remember who did the song White Wedding.
Really idle.
Billy Idol, that's right. But yes, good question.
Thank you.
I don't have a very good answer for you, I'm afraid.
I just wanted to know. I was listening to Dolly Alderton's memoir because I wanted to torture myself. She wrote a memoir at the age of 30, and I'm not feeling great about my life after that. But yeah, she mentioned jumper no less than 62 times in that book, and I had no idea.
Jumper, yeah, basically a sweater.
Okay, perfect. Steve, new episodes of Newsnight at 8:30 on Fridays on WUCF. You can stream them afterwards on their YouTube channel, on their website, any number of places. WUCF.org/newsnight at
And you're going to
WUCF.
be on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll be on October 9th. So recording on October 9th. So October 10th will be the day that you
October
hear about.
10th, 8:30, WCF. You can also catch us on Sunday mornings as well. We also run at that time. We're also on 89.9 WCF Jazz. We are there at for the early birds on Sunday morning, 6 o'clock. So if you're up early for out for your morning run or whatever, put on 89.9. You'll catch Newsnight on there as well. So we're all over the place. But you know, anytime wucf.org/newsnight. That's where you're going to find a lot of.
And at WUCF TV on most of the social media channels. So go and follow
Exactly.
them. Follow us if you like Community Paper Orlando. Subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends. And don't forget about WUCF Passport because it is a way to support very, very important news gathering and news telling. News telling? Is that a thing?
Storytelling?
Storytelling. Thank you.
Possibly.
Yeah.
News reporting, storytelling. Yeah.
Wow. Got those. News telling. That's just what we'll call it from now on.
Yeah, let's call it news telling from now on.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. Appreciate it.